Hello and welcome back to an abundance of not. Garrett here with Brad and Wade. Actually local this time.
In studio.
Yep.
In studio.
Once again, all three of us are here.
That's right. It is October 28th.
Happy Halloween, because we won't get to it.
Happy early Halloween.
Yeah.
Yes.
All Hallows Eve. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've been watching the Star Wars trailer about 7 times now. Okay, 4.
At least.
Okay, 4.
At least.
And we'll get to why that's relevant a little bit later in the show. But Brad, you're in town.
I am.
Good flight?
It was a good flight.
Had its ups and downs.
It did have its ups and downs.
Luckily, one of each.
Two
per
of each.
Flight.
Yes. One per flight. And multiple per flight is never a good thing.
No.
Interesting quirk of the airline industry that I have just gotten used to over 10 years. My journey this morning started in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Yep.
At which point I had to fly east to Atlanta to make my connection to fly back west over top of Louisiana. Watched it go by on the map.
They couldn't have puddled you over to like Dallas or something like that.
Well, if I had flown American, they probably could have. I fly Delta as much as possible when finances allow, company, you know, policy permitting. They do have a West Coast hub in Salt Lake City.
Okay.
But, you know, apparently they don't fly Shreveport to Salt Lake City. So that makes things a little more interesting.
Yeah, but it adds a couple hours to your travel situation.
It does, but, you know, like I said, over 10 years, you just learn to deal with it.
Yep. Fair enough. You're here. We're doing some, training at work, right?
Meetings, yep. So this will potentially become a more regular occurrence, actually. We're trying to get the people that are also in my position, all the project managers, all the field project managers, to have an occasional trip out to headquarters for efficiency, for meetings. You know, we can kind of get together in person and discuss what we're doing right or wrong, or, you know, take care of things. And like I had a sit down with you today, Garrett. You know, that was a much more efficient in person.
Yep.
Than to try and do that over 500 emails.
Yeah.
Could you imagine trying to do that by email?
No.
Yeah.
I would have gave up, and
yeah, exactly.
It would have stockpiled somewhere in limbo.
And instead, we sat down, and in, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, we had it squared away, and
yep,
everybody's happy. So
yep.
Should start becoming a more regular thing.
Yep. I just hope that resources elsewhere get the needs that it seems like the project management department has gotten at our company.
Absolutely.
You know, your company now, with the addition of you and the two others, has almost doubled in size, really.
Mm-hmm.
And many other departments have been untouched. And one, as we well know, is shrunk.
Yes.
So, you know, we'll just see. It's been a definite point of contention that we've talked about offline quite a while. So we won't bore listeners with that. Let's see, on this end, over the weekend, we prepped for Halloween, did the pumpkin carving thing with the kid, and otherwise had a pretty low-key weekend. Rendered down the drone videos from a couple weeks ago, so those are now live.
The epic crashes.
The epic crashes, the not-so-epic crashes, the learning curves, all there for the world to see. People that have watched or will watch will see that I didn't edit anything out to make myself look any better or whatnot than I am.
These are honest videos.
These are honest videos, true quality. I tell what happened, why it happened, and what the aftermath was. So, listen, I'm honest with my failures, and it's an opportunity to grow. So
where do we stand on the quadcopter? Is it grounded still? Or?
No, not really. I have made new landing gear for it.
Okay.
For those who've seen the video that went out today, I broke all three landing gear on it. So I have since laid up new fiberglass, and I've cut them out to shape and mounted them to some of their spacers, but I haven't mounted that to the frame yet.
Okay.
That's a 10-minute deal. Nothing major there. The biggest issue is the GoPro. I did put a scratch on the lens. I'm just hoping that is not
Permanent damage.
Permanent damage. I mean, it looks like it might be a permanent scratch, but I'm hoping it doesn't really affect the quality. It's not dead center on the lens. It's kind of, you know, off on the bevel. So I'm hoping it's enough out of the way that it won't be a big distraction for future content. So we'll see how that goes. Otherwise, I have been toying around with the idea of getting a spare or another GoPro to have maybe the opportunity for multiple angles when I film stuff.
Or 3D.
Or the potential for 3D. that's a realm I haven't thought about and a little scared of. But yeah, definitely a potential there. So, but yeah, that's where we're at with the quadcopter. It is still technically flyable. There's nothing catastrophic broken on it that would inhibit that. It's just a matter of getting her back together and getting her back up in the air.
Cool.
Yep, Halloween this coming weekend. It's always a big thing for us, so I'll be finalizing some of our preparations this weekend, Saturday morning, because we're using some common areas for decorations, and I don't want to leave those out overnight. And so maybe we'll do a little bit of a little video tour, a little quickie of maybe in daylight and then at night of what we got going on for Halloween, so that could be fun. Wade, what do you have? You have a little bit of news that you're shooting for, right?
Yep.
Nothing decided?
Nothing decided. I actually went down, and everyone knows whenever BlizzCon comes around, I kind of get a bit salty saying that, you know, we've lived down here in the Southern California area and have never gone to a BlizzCon, even though...
You tried.
Well, the problem is...
Right?
Like,
last year, you tried.
Well, you tried to, yeah, but... And their tickets are like, we're going to sell them at 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. It's like, great, thanks, guys.
Yeah, they sell their tickets at odd hours. They book a venue that they feel is appropriate, and that doesn't allow some of their fans that are willing to go and willing to pay to a degree the ability to participate and interact. Now, they offer their digital pass, right?
Yep, their virtual ticket.
Virtual ticket, but that's not the same as being there.
No. Well, I mean, one of the things about a conference is being at the conference with like-minded fanatics. I mean, fans.
Yes.
Agreed.
Right? On both.
Yes. Yes.
Anywho, I went to a... After work, I went to down to an office where they were handling applications to work at BlizzCon.
If you can't beat them, join them.
That's right.
So...
People are paying to get in. He's trying to get paid to get in.
I'm just gonna. There's nothing concrete yet. They haven't gotten back to me on anything. But it would be kind of funny to actually be in there, get paid for it, but then going back home, and like walking across like a Blizzard executive, like, I need to get back to headquarters. Like, I'm headed that way. Need a ride. But nah, you know, that's always wishful thinking, which will never happen. But, you know, it's awesome that there's a different way to get in, and they'll pay me for it, but whatever.
Nice. Well, hopefully that works out.
Yep. And, well, it's like cashier. I already do, that's already half my job.
Sure.
At the airport, so why not?
Have the experience required.
That's it.
That would be awesome.
That is definitely... hopeful, for sure. Just realizing I don't have any of my show notes right in front of me, and that's poor planning on my part. Go me!
Well done.
I know. So, that's not what
it's like.
I
we don't
either.
Do this regularly or something.
Right? I mean, it's like my first rodeo. I'm surprised the microphones work.
Well, they didn't at first.
Shut up. We're trying a new system. We've never run three microphones off of one system before.
Yeah, so this is kind of interesting. Just, you know, a technical note for our listeners, which if you don't care about, fast forward about 30 seconds. Last time we ran two microphones, right? You had one, and then Wade and I shared opposite
Correct.
Sides of one.
Because we use microphones that have the opportunity for multiple directional inputs,
yep.
It worked out versus a single directional.
But this time we're actually running three separate mics, all individually controlled. So hopefully the... audio quality has improved. New and improved.
One can only hope.
This has been your first look into the back, behind the scenes of A Planet of Not.
That's right.
Please pay $19.95 to get the full version. No.
For all the backstage passes and explicit content, yours now for a monthly donation.
But wait, we'll also include the green room.
Oh, if we ever start taping that.
Today was a good one.
It was very good.
You all got to miss out on it. So
let's jump into some
movie stuff.
You know, maybe we should do a subscription level of
unedited. If we had the ability to do this more often, we would. Unfortunately, once a week doesn't quite cut it.
We should open a Patreon.
There you go.
So in the movies this week, we have a few to talk about here. Number one, Burnt, 33%.
Ew.
This is with Bradley Cooper.
It burnt.
And internet ad. Go away. Thank you.
You know,
Bradley Cooper,
kind of a good-looking guy.
Uma Thurman, Sienna Miller, and Emma Thompson.
Don't look at me like that. I'm secure enough to admit it. He's a decent-looking guy.
He is.
It runs in the name Bradley. It must be it. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the Cooper lineage. Versus,
no. Yeah. It's the Bradley name. We're good-looking guys.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Looks are in the first name.
Do you have a funhouse mirror? No. Okay.
So, Chef Adam Jones had it all and lost it. A two-star Michelin rock star with the bad habits to match. The former infant terrible of the Paris restaurant scene did everything different every time out and the only ever cared about the thrill of creating explosions of taste. Here's a
explosions of taste.
I like that.
Show title.
To land his own kitchen and the third elusive Michelin star, though, he'll need the best of the best on his side, including the beautiful Helene, depending on how you want to pronounce it, H-E-L-E-N-E.
So is this like a live-action Ratatouille?
It sounds like it very well could be a live-action Ratatouille. We're going to go with that. It is rated R, though, I'm sure, for language and sexual content.
It's not your Disney movie.
It's not your Disney's Ratatouille. Again, rated 33%. So be mindful of that. Number two this week has no critic score, rated R. It is Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. Rated R, which I'm surprised about. Three friends who are scouts battle zombies and attempt to save their town from the undead. That's all you get to know about this one.
Halloween special.
That's right. Halloween comedy special horror something. So if you're into that and you're hopeful that no critic rating on a Wednesday before release is a good sign, by all means, have fun.
It usually isn't.
And finally is Our Brand is Crisis. Crisis, that's what I said. This is with Sandra Bullock, Billy Bob Thornton, Anthony Mackie, Zoe Kazan, and Scott McNary, to name a few. Rated R as well for sexual references and language. Sandra Bullock stars in the political comedy drama from Warner Brothers and director David Gordon Green and inspired by a 2005 documentary on the same name, an expose of a bungled American election campaign in South America. That's it. That's all they're giving us.
Yawn.
Kind of feeling the same way.
Yeah.
I dare say not the greatest weekend for movies.
It's opening widely, though.
Well, names like Sandra Bullock and Billy Bob Thornton, I would imagine they're going to blast this thing.
2,200 screens.
That's a fair amount of theaters.
Yeah. Burnt is going to be 2,400.
Okay.
And Scout's Guide will be 1,500.
Huh.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. Whatever.
In the box office this weekend,
we don't run the theaters.
That's why we don't. It helps when you have decent content to give. And
that's not this week.
That's not this week in the film industry, that's for sure. So in the box office this week, we have The Martian, number one, once again, 15.7 million. Goosebumps pulls in 15.5 million. Bridge of Spies staying in there at 11.4. And The Last Witch Hunter pulls in 10.8 million. There's a few honorable mentions in there, such as Steve Jobs pulls in 7.1 and Paranormal Activity pulls in 8.1. So, movie stuff.
So, domestic gross on Martian, which I'm a big fan of.
Right.
So far, we're at the 26-day mark. is 168, or just shy of 169 million. 26 okay. days.
I mean, that's not mind-blowing. I mean, yeah. Star Wars will get that in one night.
Well, sure, oh, but God, their production yeah. budget was 108, so they're already 60 million profit.
Yep, from production, less marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, not too bad.
Very good. On the slight movie front, a little bit of comedy here. So, we had picked up, I talked to you about this earlier today, we picked up Jurassic World this past week. And, you know, I wanted my daughter to see it. I thought she would, you know, get a kick out of it to a degree. She was very hesitant. To the point where when I showed her the movie, she goes, yeah, I'm no. And so we made a little wager. We said, you know, if you like it, $5 to me. If you don't like it, $5 to you. So about 10, 15 minutes into the movie, she leans over at me and goes, I think I have to owe you $5. Now, at the end of the movie, she didn't have the same conviction. She definitely was maybe a little bit shocked or a little bit distracted by the drama or the suspense and to some degree horror of it. But I think overall she would tolerate it again. But this is a 9-year-old who'd never seen any of the original ones too. So this is kind of her first experience into it. But,
so we broke our kids in right to this for the weeks leading up to the release of Jurassic World, which is movie 4.
Yes.
We actually bought the original trilogy. And each weekend we watched one of the movies leading up to. So, you know, fourth weekend we went and saw the new one. And they are definitely Jurassic World or Jurassic Park fans.
Yep.
Which I'm proud of.
In the prequel or the original trilogy, did you get a theatrical set or was it a like extended features, whatever?
I think it was the theatrical.
Okay. So I was curious if there was any sort of deleted scenes that were thrown in there that would be noteworthy.
Not that I recall.
Okay.
But I tend to skip over extras and just...
Well, I was saying if it was the extended cut or whatever, right, not the theatrical, it would have been part of the actual movie itself.
Not that I noticed.
All right. Let's jump into some news here.
Starting off news this week, unfortunately, we're going to start on a sour note. The cybersecurity bill is back again.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, exactly. Link will be in the show notes. Tuesday, the Senate voted overwhelmingly to pass it. It was 74-21, so now it's on to the House. The president has already indicated that should it arrive on his desk, he will sign it. So we're kind of counting on the House now to defeat this, which I'm not holding out much hope. So this time it is named the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Act, CISA. And it's a major blow to civil liberties and internet privacy. Not so much with the intent, but the way it's been written has left some major loopholes, essentially giving the FBI and the FBI and the NSA, our favorite three-letter government agencies, wide open access to whatever they can get their hands on. And it does give immunity to any of the tech companies that want to voluntarily turn over information. So they can hand over your privacy, or they can hand over your information, giving you no privacy, and there's no recourse for you. So this is a major blow. I'm getting ticked off with this. This is the third or fourth time we've dealt with this now.
Yep.
They keep bringing it up, and the public keep saying, no, this isn't what we want. And they keep bringing it up. This time they've tried to slip it through. You'll notice there have been very little news coverage. It's hardly mentioned anywhere. So they did manage to slip it through the Senate. Hopefully the House will defeat it.
Well, they always do this. They will keep reintroducing a bill until they get more people paid off. And
absolutely.
Or they reword it just slightly here and there. That doesn't really change anything, but it makes people feel better about it.
Yep. So in an effort to try and temper this, there were several amendments introduced to try and close some of the loopholes. Each one of the amendments was defeated So an anonymous source has said that CISA would give our spy agencies greater visibility, and that was the point of the bill. So it's been sold to the public as a cybersecurity will keep you safer, but an unnamed source says the whole point of it is to give the spy agencies, you know, all the access they want that is falling apart at the moment. You know, we've had several court challenges. We've had trips to the Supreme Court where they've all, I shouldn't say all, where a lot of them have ruled the NSA's activities are unconstitutional and illegal and they need to stop. So rather than stopping, they're trying to legalize it.
And keeping with the tradition, and this is how democracy ends, with thunderous applause.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You know, like the good old V for Vendetta movie says, government should be afraid of its people. People should not be afraid of its government.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
We've gotten away from that.
Well, you look at how the mass populace gets its information, and you look at where the decision-making happens in that pathway, and things start to make sense.
Oh, have you seen the controversy with the most recent political debate? All the major news stories were like, yeah, Clinton won. But on social media, everyone's like, nah, Bernie won. And why? Because Clinton is the corporate
name.
Sponsor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is the corporate candidate.
Yeah.
While Bernie is more the people's choice.
Yep. Yeah, make sure when it comes to big stuff like that, you're doing your research.
Yeah, definitely pay attention. You know, eyes wide open. This is, we're in some serious times, and there are those, I won't broad brush the entire government organizations, but there are those that definitely want to
take advantage.
Yeah, limit your rights and your freedom as much as they can, because it makes it inconvenient for them, you know?
To follow the rules as currently established.
Yes. One piece of follow-up while we're on this particular topic, though, was it last week or the week before, we covered the court challenge to Apple, where they are demanding Apple remove the encryption from a couple of devices that have been confiscated.
Yes.
And Apple had a certain amount of time to respond. Well, they have responded, and their response was exactly in line with what we thought it would be. We cannot decrypt it. We don't have the keys. Apple doesn't want the keys. Since iOS version 8, they don't store the encryption keys on any of their servers. It is completely on the device. So the government brings this device and goes, you open it. And they go, we can't. We don't have it all. We don't have any of it.
That's what encryption means.
That's right. That's the whole point of it. So that's some really good news. The question is, this is a carryover. It's evidence from an older case. So the question that remains is that, is the device pre-iOS 8? In which case, Apple may be able to do something with it. But if it's iOS 8 or 9 or any of their subversions, Apple can't do anything. They don't. So the interesting challenge there now comes down to the end user license agreement. You don't own the phone. Well, you own the hardware. You don't own the software. It's licensed.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't Apple control its own software? So
they choose not to, and they're not legally bound to yet.
So definitely not over with, but a little bit of good news to go with the bad.
Very good. I mean, not very good. Very good that there's a little bit of a light there.
Yes.
I guess is what I'm trying to say. All right. Wait.
Well, continuing on a sour note, have any of you played Assassin's Creed Syndicate?
No.
Syndicate, no.
Well,
it's not available for PC yet.
Thanks. Judging from the numbers, you'd be in the boat with a lot of people, as the launch sales are low, as in second worst in the entire series low.
Wow.
Only outselling more than Rogue.
I have Rogue. Wait for it.
For those that are audio only, No, I don't have Rogue.
I have Rogue. That was and the... this sound indicates that Rogue is still in the plastic covering it was in when I bought it. So I've bought it. I haven't played it.
So it's Ubi, right?
Yes.
Ubisoft. Thanks you for your money.
Yes. I have no clue to the content. I mean, I love Assassin's Creed. I will play it. For those
as soon as he finishes Batman.
Exactly.
Not pointing any fingers, Garrett.
Yeah. While he sticks his finger at me.
E-cig.
At E-cig and makes a circle and blows a smoke ring. I plan on playing that. I plan on picking up a Syndicate. I don't have a next-gen console because I haven't needed one until, like,
now.
Right now. But there's a PC option, and I'm hoping my PC has the strength to run it. So, I'm going to try that.
So, if I understand correctly, though, next-gen is out, right? But PC is not yet.
Correct. PC version is out the 19th.
Yes, of November. Yep.
November.
Okay. And how long has console been out?
We do not
a week.
Yeah, a week.
Okay.
Earlier this week.
Week sales for a week.
Week sales for the first week-ish.
And judging because this is people have been probably speaking on part of how the performance of Rogue was, and that's what they're saying, a buggy mess.
Okay, well, here's my counter to that. Rogue was Ubisoft's way of appeasing the people like myself who haven't graduated the next-gen consoles yet. Because they offered Unity at the same time, which was the next-gen Assassin's Creed version last year. You had Rogue and Unity that released the same time. One was next-gen, one was previous. And now Syndicate is the current, and it is next-gen slash PC only.
They are still citing that it, with that mess, that it has left little faith for Syndicate.
Yeah, we've discussed this before. Chip it. We'll fix it later.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
We'll download a 3-gig patch and...
We'll charge people $3.99 as a DLC.
We'll call it DLC.
We gave you two new weapons and fixed all the crap we didn't fix the first time.
Unlock the cane sword. You should have had that in the beginning. What? So, unfortunately, well...
Maybe this will mean they'll get a discount when I buy it in a month.
It's low.
I'm still waiting to play Grand Theft Auto 5.
But we
did you buy it?
No, not yet.
Yeah, I don't feel like
I'm waiting for the price to come down. Same thing. When it gets around like 20, I'll jump in.
Okay, I'll think about it.
You guys missed it, James, because there was this Steam sale where you bought the game, but you also gave you a card for $60.
Oh, no, I did see that. Yeah. I did see that.
You got like an in-game.
It was
card.
A markup though, right? It was like $80 for the game, but you got a $60 in-game credit. No thanks.
You could buy crap in-game if you want
to. It's the money, so you can get
in-game currency.
Yeah. But
microtransactions.
This may go into. We may see an increase in numbers when it's released for the PC. Probably. As we've seen, more and more people have been holding on to PC and not going to consoles.
It is interesting. I mean, I was always a console gamer growing up, mainly because my parents saw games on the computer were a detriment. They feared that they would harm the computer. And if we already had a console, then what do I need computer games for? So we had the NES, Nintendo. We had the Sega Genesis, couple generations of. We had the PS1 a couple times, N64, PS2, now PS3. We've had Xboxes. You had an Xbox 360 that you sold.
Yep.
We've always been consolers until fairly recently. And I've gotten into the PC stuff. And having that, and having just the plethora of opportunities to play stuff on PC, there's so much available for relatively cheap, that the need to get another console is minimal. You know, I still have the PS3 and I use it here and there, but I'm on the PC way more than I am with console games.
Sure. Well, and PC gives you the opportunity to upgrade incrementally.
Yes.
You know, your computer works and maybe it doesn't play this game quite as well as you want it to. So you dumb the graphics down a little bit. And then you have a couple bucks extra, so you throw some more RAM in it, or you get a better video card, and you can work on that. Next gen isn't, well, consoles are...
No longer next gen.
No. We got to stop. It's current generation
current
now.
Current gen, yeah.
360 and PS3 are old.
Yes.
It's an all or nothing thing. Either you cough up the $400 and buy one, or
it's a
you
sealed,
don't.
It's a sealed PC.
Yeah. Yep.
That's got specific coding and operating system.
Wasn't there the whole thing that you could install Windows on an Xbox original and just
ways around it, yeah.
So the interesting thing about that is Xbox One runs a modified, highly modified version of Windows 8.
There we are.
Now, they are getting ready to push out the updates that will convert it to Windows 10, thereby bringing around full circle Microsoft's dream of a common core, right? So you'll have desktop, tablet, phone, and Xbox will all be running Windows 10, but they will have a different experience, right? So you're not going to have a start menu on the Xbox.
Yeah,
that's
but they're
stupid.
Talking the same language.
But on the back end, whether you have a phone or an Xbox or a PC, they're all Windows 10. So, you know, it is a Windows machine, but it's a black box Windows machine. You don't get to see in it. You don't get to upgrade it. It is what it is. The one thing that I am excited with, though, with the Xbox One is their talk of backwards compatibility, finally.
Yeah.
You know, I'm cautiously optimistic on this. They have released a list of games. They're mostly crap that are 360 games that will run on the Xbox One. But from the talk that I've heard and from sources, the push for Windows 10 core on Xbox One is actually what is allowing the backwards compatibility. Once they complete that upgrade, that's going to open up much more. And see, if I could play
so
my
Xbox... they can run the emulators and whatever
exactly,
on it.
Exactly, much better. So, you know, that's... well, that and money, but money's always the big thing. But that's one of the big things, honestly, holding me back from the newer consoles, is we've got a library of, I dare say, 100 Xbox 360 games.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to give all those up. And do I want to run multiple consoles? Well, that's been the answer up until now.
Yeah.
But if I can run all my 360 games on an Xbox One, then I've got a few trade-ins to make.
There you go.
Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate on that one, because I kind of... I'm tired of them allowing them to have backwards compatibility, and like the really only reason is you think, okay, well, because I have all these games here, and there are really no games out for the other, for the air quotes new system. Let's go with that.
Current gen.
Yeah, current gen. And,
it
and,
is current.
Yes. I think the issue is if you actually had games for the current gen, that you wouldn't need backwards compatibility because people would be playing the
what's available
current gen ones, and you wouldn't be touching the old ones. Now, this, like as always said, is that it's always you have to have games to sell the system, but you have to have the system
to play the games.
To play the games. So
see, my issue with the current getting another console or replacing the PS3 is my situation, the environment I have to play. We have one TV in the house that is shared through 3.5 people. I have my desk and my computer rig set up, which is where I record. Now, obviously, I record some of the console stuff, and that's all fine and good. But if I had a place to where I could recreationally and comfortably play the console, where and I could play it more regularly, say if I had another TV center or an entertainment center that was an addition to the main one of the house, I would have an easier time justifying and utilizing that equipment. But because I don't have that striking need to go out and get
and
what's
buy.
Available
yeah.
because I don't feel like I would really utilize it.
You need a bigger place. You need to move east.
Shut, I'm not moving east.
To your point, though, Wade.
Yeah.
That's always been a two-edged sword, right? The reason why Windows is the giant piece of expletive
filth
yeah, that it is because they've been dragging along backwards compatible code.
Yep.
You know, they didn't kill DOS until Windows XP. They didn't kill 16-bit until Windows 7, I think.
Mm.
Which 16-bit was introduced in Windows 3.1, okay?
Yeah.
How's that for reference? We're talking about the 80s.
Yep.
That code wasn't killed until...
2012-ish?
2005.
Is Windows 7 that old?
I think so.
Oh, well.
Yeah. See, isn't that kind of the funny thing? On one forum, you'll see, oh, Windows 10 sucks. It's got some massive thing. Then it's like, oh, but my backwards compatibility. You are literally saying yay to this and boo to this, yep. But they are the same monster.
Yep, absolutely. So I definitely see that. Although I feel like the way they've handled it with the consoles is better. Okay, we're not dragging legacy code all the way. Sony did it with the PlayStation, right? You could play PS2 games on the PS3.
PS1 games.
Oh, you could?
I've done it. Okay. I've recorded it.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Oddworld,
yes.
Oddworld, yes. Abe's World. Abe's World. Whatever. You knew what I meant.
I think there was a PlayStation 1 game. Pretty sure.
Okay. But you can't do that on the 4, right? You can't play
Don't believe so.
Right. So at some point, they cut it off.
Yes.
And I don't think that that's a bad thing. So, sure. So the 360, you could play original Xbox games on. Most
eventually.
Of them. Yes.
It wasn't off the shelf that way because
the
issue.
You had to have a hard drive.
Well, the issue with that was because with the original Xbox, Microsoft outsourced coding to a third party.
Yes.
When they created the 360, that company said no. Either contractually, they couldn't make it work.
Right.
So now Microsoft had to
do it themselves.
Do it themselves. And mm-hmm. It took a long time mm-hmm. for them to finally roll it all out.
Yeah.
And that was a big reason why I stayed with Sony from PlayStation 1, 2, 3, is that it was all Sony proprietary.
Yep.
They controlled it. And sure. Out of the box, if you had the larger hard drive, you could play
sure.
all the way back.
But my point is, Xbox 360 played original Xbox games. I have zero problem. You know, that kind of buffered your transition time.
Yes.
I have no problem with Xbox One not playing original Xbox games. Don't sure. bring all the legacy code.
Yeah.
But if you bridge it, right? Let me play 360 games.
Mm-hmm.
Then whatever the next one is, won't play 360 games, but should play Xbox yeah. One games.
Sure.
And, you know, keep so, allow me yeah. one generation previous.
So that when I'm waiting for that next big game to hit,
exactly.
I have yeah. stuff that I can play instead of a $400 brick sitting on my
with
my
one
end table.
Game.
And, yeah. and if it's... Actually, they've done this quite well with the Master Chief Collection. Sorry. They've brought back everything, the maps from all the Halo games. Pretty much upscaled them in graphic-wise.
Yeah.
And then, have fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're going to do. And perfect. You know, I still get to play all the Halo stuff. But I don't because I don't have an Xbox One, but whatever.
Yeah, theoretically.
But, you know, I don't want to get, what is it, 400 cheap crap games?
Yeah.
Give me the good ones. It's why I'm going to be probably, like, I keep the system.
Yeah. Give me Forza. Give me Halo. Give me Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me the AAA games.
Yep.
Give me Call of Duty, you know. I mean, I can list a laundry sure. list of AAA games, but I don't want Worms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, who cares?
Worms can be fun. At least okay. I have Worms on my phone.
But they have new
iterations. And that was fun. But yeah, do you need it on a console? No.
They have new iterations on that like you can download off their stores on the consoles like all the time.
Yeah. That's maps and
whatnot. And whenever, and the only thing that, last thing that bugs me with this is that whenever you get a backwards compatibility game, you're starting the game over.
Sure.
I'm not getting your save file on
right.
this. It's like, you know what? I don't really feel like putting that much time into it again.
Yeah. So I can play Gears of War, so that's good.
Yeah.
I don't feel I need Hexic.
That was like for the launch
or
like,
Super Meat Boy. Or Viva Pineda.
Super Meat Boy did get a pretty high following, though. So I could kind of see that.
Okay, all right.
That's one of those cult classic type
things. Yeah, sure. Exactly. The cult indie, so.
I don't know.
All right, are we moving on?
Move on. It's your turn.
Okay, so we mentioned that we watched the Star Wars trailer ad nauseum prior to the show. And I came across this yesterday, and it definitely piqued my interest because I dig those conspiracy theories or those little kind of subplots that you don't really pick up on the surface when you either read or watch something. And this was spelled out beautifully. So, collectively, we're all Star Wars fans.
Absolutely. I mean,
we're not the people that are going to dress up at convention stuff, but some of us might.
Just because I haven't doesn't mean I wouldn't.
No slave Leia outfit.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. I would look good in it.
Jury's out.
I've gone blind.
So this article is the Luke Skywalker theory that destroys everything you thought you knew about Star Wars.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. This coincides with some statements last week regarding Luke Skywalker not necessarily being in the trailer, at least not explicitly.
Yes.
And that Luke Skywalker is not in the Force Awakens movie poster explicitly. I say explicitly because this article digs into the theory we're going to discuss. So, first things first. This article hits you right in the face with what they're trying to say. And that is that at the end of Return of the Jedi, Episode 6, Luke turned to the dark side. That's the pitch
that
we're selling.
That's the opening shot.
That's the pitch we're selling. Okay?
Clickbait is everyone's
on. Cue potential evidence. All right? The cave scene.
Spoiler alert. No. We're too far past that.
Yeah, we're too far
past
that.
If you haven't seen Star Wars...
And don't care,
there's
don't
something
listen.
Wrong.
Yeah, someone needs to write up a review, write up, like, rules for spoiler alerts. Because, like, how long does it, like, require for it to be a spoiler alert? How long does it, like...
Yeah, no, I'm pretty
You
sure.
should know this. Screw you guys.
I'm pretty sure we are outside the statute of limitations yeah, on
that's
that. So,
correct.
Yeah, we're good.
Need someone to write that up, please.
First bit of evidence is the cave scene on Dagobah. And the author states that Yoda knew that Luke was on the same path that Anakin was. He criticized both of being too old at time of beginning training, yet trained them anyway. We saw how that went well with Anakin. He didn't train Anakin, but he kind of allowed him to be trained by Obi-Wan. And he reluctantly started training Luke. Okay, and in the cave scene where Luke confronts Force Vader, that ends up being his face in the helmet, and also Yoda tells Luke that if he leaves to save his friends, he will therefore fail to complete his training and will start his path towards the dark side. Not in those exact words, but pretty much along those lines.
It's hinted at.
It is said that if you leave now, you will not complete your training. There was an original ending to the movie. However, it was changed. And that original ending was essentially that Luke walks off onto his own. He defects from the group and goes on his own path. As opposed to the collective brouhaha that of course happens. Another piece of evidence is when Luke confronts Jabba the Hutt to free Leia and Han, he expresses that in a fair trade or in a trade to Jabba, that he will give him the droids. He already sent him R2 and C-3PO, that he would give him these droids. Now, we never really believed he was going to give Jabba these droids, right? I mean...
Right.
So what? He lied. Not really a Jedi characteristic. Okay? So hold on to that for a bit. Hold on to the fact that Luke lied. Again, was this a threat to Jabba? Because he says, if you don't do this, then you will be destroyed. That's a threat and a touch of arrogance, I might say. That usually coincides someone of the dark side. Okay. And then the fight scene with Vader. Obviously, the Emperor is baiting Luke, quite aggressively, telling him to grab his lightsaber and strike the Emperor down, let the hatred flow through him, etc., etc. And Luke tries to do this. He does, in fact, retrieve his lightsaber. He does, in fact, try to strike at the Emperor, only to be blocked by Vader. Okay? Your hate has made you powerful, was a line said. And in fighting Vader, we see a very strong sense of rage come over Luke. He is, and he kicks Vader's ass, eventually. There's another side note in here that's a little bit deeper in the text, but the author talks about, if you watch Return of the Jedi again, you'll notice Luke is far more serious and determined in Return of the Jedi than he was in the previous two movies. And one could potentially extrapolate that he's actually drawn towards Vader. He does, in fact, although doesn't admit to it, is drawn to ruling the galaxy as father and son. He goes and meets up with Vader willingly on the Ewok moon, mm-hmm. Endor. All this kind of building up, right? Now, there was a scene where he looks down at his wrist after he defeated Vader, and some look at when he cuts off Vader's hand and look at the similarities between the two. The author also potentially implies that maybe he's realizing the effectiveness of this power, of this rage, of this anger that he just unleashed. It's an insinuation, one person's view.
Where I've taken that for almost a remorse.
Okay.
Right? Not denying the points that they've brought out.
Sure.
But that it was almost like a holy crap moment. Like, I'm beginning to walk that path and need to be checked.
Sure. And I kind of saw the same way.
Yeah.
That we both are the same in this regard. Robotic hands. We both cut off each other's hands, actually.
Right.
In a matter of speaking.
Yep.
Vader's was already robotic at that point, obviously. But it could be insinuated that he is finding, you know, he sees the strength here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it goes further on in regards to the interaction with Luke and the Emperor, that the Emperor's baiting him and baiting him to a point, and then the Emperor stops baiting. He stops kind of poking and prodding. And you kind of are trying to figure out why. Is it the fact that the Emperor realized that Luke would never turn? Or is it the Emperor realized that
he'd already pushed him past that tipping point?
And it's no longer an apprentice, but is now a rival. Is now pure and utter competition for the throne.
And we know that there can only ever be two Sith.
There can only ever be two Sith. And it's always
a master and an apprentice.
Okay. Now, all this leads up to a few other points. Mark Hamill himself, let's see. Well, there's a line about, "You failed your highness, I am a Jedi like my father before me," that Luke says to the Emperor. But we've already established that Luke has lied in the past. And he realizes really the path that he's on, but he can't give the Emperor the satisfaction of that. But I'm trying to find the line that actually Mark Hamill said himself. Let's see. Essentially, Mark Hamill said that it would be a poetic ending. Here it is. "As an actor, it would be fun to play," and he's talking about Luke becoming dark. "I just thought that that's the way it was going when we finished The Empire. I figured that that's what will be the pivotal moment. I'll have to come back, but it will have Han Solo in the cross. Luke will come back, but I'll have Han Solo in my crosshairs, and I'll be about to kill him, or about to kill the princess, or about to kill somebody that we care about. It's an old cornball movie like World War II movies." Now, when it talks about some of that, you can't help think about when Anakin went all rampage on the Sand People when his mother was killed in the previous movies.
Right.
A lot of similarities there. Now,
the genocide.
The pure and utter genocide.
Yeah.
Now, this all...
how many did you kill?
All of them. The men, the women, the children, all of them.
The entire race gone. The
entire tribe, at least, whatever it was. But why is this relevant? Well, back to the first statement, Luke doesn't explicitly appear in the trailer and doesn't explicitly appear in the movie poster. But does he? If he turned, would he not therefore be a Sith Lord? We've seen a Sith Lord in the movies, in the trailer and in the poster. There's a scene where in the trailer, the Sith Lord is talking to Vader's burnt helmet, saying that I will finish what you started. That sounds like a son following in father's footsteps. Who else would have had access to Vader's helmet unless someone just happened to come across the burning body and grab it? That's interesting. So, predictions here are that Luke is in fact suspicious, and potential predictions are that Luke is in fact the new Sith Lord. Why else I feel this way is that we've seen the Sith Lord in this kind of hooded cloak. It's not the cape that Vader wore, but is more of a cloak, reminiscent of Obi-Wan, reminiscent of Luke at Jabba the Hutt's palace, and reminiscent of the individual who puts a robotic hand on R2 in the trailer. Who else would still be interacting with R2? Who else have we seen wear a cloak? And with maybe some of this information having to go back and watch Return of the Jedi, who else is on the path to the dark side?
And if we remember, R2 would shock anyone he doesn't know.
So it implies that R2 obviously is around somebody he's familiar with.
Question marks all around.
Yes.
So who's going to see this movie?
I'm not. No, I don't care.
Nah. There's not enough suspense in it.
Stupid
stuff. No, I mean, there hasn't been any buildup. And, I mean, and the first six movies were kind of junk anyway. I mean, totally behind their time. Not interested.
And yet the nerds feel a disturbance in the Force in their comments.
There has been a disturbance in the Force. Definitely.
That's another thing. We talked about this in the green room about the prophecy.
Yes.
Back to the discussion in this article.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Wade.
Yes.
So the prophecy was
that Luke was to bring balance to the Force.
That there would be an individual that would bring balance to the Force.
Yes.
We always assumed it was someone good bringing balance to the two dark sides.
I don't think it was about Luke. I think it was about Anakin.
Because he wiped out a lot of the good because the dark was right. only ever yeah. two.
I think it was...
Truly was about Anakin because he balanced out the fact that there was so much Jedi versus so right. little
yeah.
Sith.
Yeah.
That's true. But it was always implied in the original Star Wars that prophecy would bring balance to the Force. And what we had talked about is at the end of Return of the Jedi, it's a wide agreement that Vader had actually... return to the Jedi side of the Force. I don't want to say good. Good and evil is a matter of opinion and perception. Dark side and Jedi.
Right. He had turned back to light side because once he dies, in that closing scene, he is pictured with
Yoda
Obi-Wan
and Yoda. Yeah.
And Yoda.
Correct.
Right? So
either ending you want to talk about, whether it's old Anakin post-Vader or young Anakin from the prequels that nobody likes, either way... It's supposed to depict back when Anakin was a Jedi, and this was, you know, had returned to that form. So we know the Sith are always two, and Vader had thrown the Emperor down the shaft. So there were no Sith, but we feel that Vader had returned to good, and there was always, per Yoda, there's another. We have learned that that is Leia. So there's good now, and now there's no darkness.
There's nothing to balance.
There's no balance.
There's no balance in the Force.
One more thing to think about. One of those things that you didn't pick up on when you watched it because we were too wrapped up in the hero is the hero.
And the fact that he kissed his sister.
Incestuous bastard. And was proud of it.
He didn't know.
Well,
at the time.
She must have been a good kisser. Brad and Wade are sharing show notes here on the side, so bear with us here.
I'll have to read it later. It's really little. All right.
So, some Star Wars theory for you.
So, I think it is interesting.
It's an interesting theory. It's portrayed the way it does, it sounds like it has credibility, but...
I will need to go back and rewatch movies, well, halfway really through 2 to 6.
It's mainly, well, if you want to just stick with the core three to, about Luke, you can just see...
We don't need to rewatch 1.
No, no one needs to see 1 ever again. No,
nobody ever wants to see 1 again.
In fact, if you have a copy of The Phantom Menace, you are required by society to destroy it.
Although the music was good.
You can keep the soundtrack.
Yes.
Destroy the movie.
Yeah.
Even though that's the only one Liam Neeson was in, and that's kind of a downer. Brad's crying.
Yeah.
Were you going just to rewatch those and maybe with a new light?
Rewatch it with a new take on
maybe,
things.
Maybe more of a blank
not
perspective.
Not so caught up in the space opera.
Yes.
And look critically at the subtones. It's been no secret that... Lucas wrote this as a double trilogy.
Yes.
It was always intended to be a double trilogy. In fact, I have seen some stories where it was supposed to be a triple trilogy. But it was definitely always supposed to be a double trilogy, and he started in the middle. So I can't see that anything that happened was by accident.
Now, it was said in the article, though, that there was, again, there's supposed to be, there's a previous ending that was written for the end of Return of the Jedi. And actually, that movie is supposed to be called Revenge of the Jedi.
Yes. Except Jedi don't take revenge.
Exactly.
And that's why they changed it.
Changed it.
Yes.
But it was widely agreed upon by the director at the time that Lucas had changed the ending of the movie because Lucas Films and Lucas Arts was making so much money on merchandise, hand over fist over what they were making of the movies, that he couldn't jeopardize that business model. And so by that, they maybe left it more ambiguous than maybe the original text would have shown. So, unfortunately, we got really winded in that, and we are at our hour mark.
This was definitely a geek out episode.
This was a little bit of a geek out wars episode. But like I said, I am totally into the conspiracy theories. I don't believe everything I read, but when stuff can be portrayed in a well enough with enough supporting information, I definitely see the logic in it. So that's where I was at with this. Any other closing remarks from you guys?
I'm stoked that for episode 7. You know what? Let's call it episode 4. We're just going to pretend the prequels don't exist.
They didn't.
Yes.
Because they said they retconned everything until the verse 3. They basically, most of the stuff is wiped.
Well, it doesn't really tie in. It's supposed to be backstory and not a continuation. So, it's fine.
And you remember the Force Unleashed games?
Not really.
Yes.
No longer canon.
It never was canon. Well, okay, but it's kind of this subplot that Vader had a secret apprentice, and that was the character you played. I can see that being... I'm trying to remember how that ends. You turn light at the end, don't
you? I've never played it, actually.
Okay. It's been a long time since I've played it. You know what? That was actually an open strategy game. You could choose...
Light or dark.
Light or dark, yeah.
Like Fable was, where you could choose the actions you did.
Or Knights of the Old Republic, which I'm actually replaying on my iPad.
Oh, wasn't that the one where like you could choose to go light or dark, and then you just realized, screw it, you were dark all along?
Yes. Yeah. you could choose to be light or dark, but... and I don't feel bad for the spoilers here because it's a 20-year-old game.
It's the statute of limitations thing.
Yeah.
Well, there was another point in that article people can reread, but it talks about doing good by destructive means.
Okay.
And that was kind of the same way Anakin went.
Yep.
He was trying to do good, but the way he went about it was destructive, and that's kind of how Luke went after leaving Dagobah.
Right.
But I definitely recommend, if you're curious at all, check this article out. It is in the show notes, of course, like everything else. Have a good time.
Sounds good.
All right. Once again, we do thank you guys for listening to this long-winded Star Wars edition of An Abundance of Not. And do like us on Facebook, facebook.com/abundance.not, Twitter @abundancenot, Wade's at
AON Seawall
599, I believe.
Brad is at The Nutty P.
The Nutty P. Are you still, your account hasn't been deleted from Twitter?
No.
You're active?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I don't tweet much. I read a lot. Yeah, but I'm there.
We're here for you guys. So touch base, and we will see you next
time.
What
is our Twitter account first?
At Abundance Not.
No, what is our count?
Oh, we are at 433-ish at this point. Wade is looking for that magic 500 number.
He really wants to play this game. Please, yep. he won't shut up. Would you get your friends to like us so I don't have to hear this anymore?
I just updated the game, and there's new things I have to do with. So that'll be like a first run for me.
Plus the $50 raffle at 500. So like, share, express how awesome you think we are. Or if we're just mediocre, it's fine. You could win $50. get the word out. Thanks.
Tell them we're stupid. Like us. That's a wrap.
Keep on gaming.